Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition, the Friday the 13th edition, actually, of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, as usual. And two out of three once again deal with Hillary Clinton. The good comes from Politico. The story says, White House frets return of Clinton way. They thought she'd changed. They thought maybe she'd picked up a little bit from them about how people respond to awkward secret arrangements and contrived ways of not telling the full story. This has been a surprising 2 weeks for aides in President Barack Obama's orbit as they've watched Hillary Clinton's email mess unfold. They're basically saying, the nomination is hers for the taking, and she's basically stumbling out of the gate. It goes on to say that Obama aides had that feeling that Clinton doesn't like to tell the full story even after she joined the administration, and their staffs tried following Obama's and Clinton's leads and building mutual trust almost to the point of suspension of disbelief. Quote, you never feel like you're getting the full story because everyone's got some side deal or some complicating factor, said one former Obama aide reflecting on dealing with Clinton and her circle. I don't think there was a conscious effort to watch out for scams. It was more just, you know who you're dealing with, unquote. So, Jim, it's obvious that these two have not had the greatest relationship going back to the 2008 campaign. So it's kind of fun to watch the Obama administration distance themselves further and further away from her.
Fun, Greg? I think that's an understatement. I think delicious. I think delightful comes to mind. Because think about it. I mean, basically, there are some unnamed White House officials who are telling major media, yeah, the Secretary of State never trusted her. You know, shifty character. Just never got the feeling, you know, I trust Hillary Clinton about as far as I can throw her. Okay, then why'd you make her Secretary of State, right? If she always has this aura of scandal and secret deals and shifty dishonesty and never giving a straight answer or having to parse her, why did you entrust her with a foreign policy for the entire first term? The Obama administration, as you can tell, desperately wants to distance themselves from Hillary Clinton. I don't think you can put somebody into such a trusted position and then say, yeah, we didn't really know her that well. You know, she was a temp worker. You know, we just coupled with the fact, let's assume that they're correct. And it's very plausible to believe that Hillary Clinton would not share all of the information and all the necessary details with President Obama and his top staff. This is where we could insert audio of Dr. Evil saying, I need the info. Because, you know, they're very information are not ending up in memos that they need. I mean, they have every right to be really, really off at her. Because, you know, as we increasingly add up, you know, there's no security on her BlackBerry at all for the first couple months. Just assume all that's in FSB servers right now. Just assume Chinese intelligence has it, the Iranian intelligence has it, all that kind of stuff. Then she claims there's sufficient, you know, security on her servers, or on her personal private servers, but we don't know that. She won't turn it over. There's no way for the NSA or State Department security or anybody else to protect that. So as we kind of alluded to in a previous martini, like, you know, it's very plausible that foreign intelligence have had all of her communications from day one. And if you're the president of the United States, you have this is a huge, huge problem for you. And it may explain if at any point, you know, Obama went into negotiations with Putin or Chinese leaders or somebody like that, and they seemed to know everything he was going to do before he did it. Maybe we know why now, and we may never get the full story on this. But on the one hand, it's kind of delicious to watch the entire Obama administration act like they never met Hillary Clinton and certainly never trusted her. And the flip side, maybe like the person who's done the single most damage to the Obama presidency is not a single Republican, not a single conservative, but is in fact Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, that would be something. And there were stories out yesterday that just regular computer experts, not actually trying to get information, found that it wasn't that hard to hack into her server. And so it's becoming increasingly clear, it seems like, Jim, that Hillary Clinton literally thought her server was secure because no one broke into her house.
Yeah, exactly. The interesting thing is this means that not only does she not understand how computers work, she's never watched a hacking movie. Right? You know, young Angelina Jolie and the Hackers or any of the Matrix movies, like Cyber, you know, the abominably bad Swordfish, right? I mean, Hollywood has been making movies about this for a really long time. And yes, they do very inaccurate stuff. Like if you spill water on a computer, it suddenly explodes, you know, and things like that. But nonetheless, like even that gives you a more cursory knowledge of how this works than Hillary Clinton seems to think. So She thinks that if you steal it, is the only way to actually steal the emails and such.
No wonder she printed them all off.
There you go. Exactly. Well, they're safe now.
Unbelievable. All right. On to the bad martini now. And there's been a lot of debate about whether Hillary Clinton actually broke any laws. So folks like Andrew Napolitano say yes. Lanny Davis, of course, says no. But Lanny Davis always says no. But anyway, the question came up at a State Department briefing yesterday. Jen Psaki, who's about to become the new communications director at the White House, was at the podium for the State Department. And a very important question came up. And her answer was, let's just say, less than satisfying.
A former DOJ attorney has asked if, under department policy, asked if Secretary Clinton, like all officials here in this building, when they depart or separate from office, has to sign something called a Form OF-109. It's a separation statement declaring that when you leave office, you're turning any turn over not just classified materials, but any documents for official purposes.
Sure. I think this has been asked. It was more than 2 years ago. I don't have an update on that specific question at this point.
How hard is it to get an answer to that, Jim?
Well, you said, you know, Jen Psaki's answer was not satisfying. That kind of goes without saying, right? Doesn't it? All right, but yeah, so what's revealing is if the answer was yes, they'd be telling us yes. Right. I mean, that's not that hard. You know, she can go and say, hey, all these files, all these documents are all kept on file somewhere. So the question would be, go to person who's in charge of State Department archiving and say, hey, did Hillary ever sign the form saying she turned over everything she was supposed to? I'm going to, you know, go on a crazy limb here, Greg, and assume the answer is no. I'm going to assume that she didn't do it. And so there's two observations. One is that we on the right look at elite liberals, the folks who I call the progressive aristocracy. It's, oh, God, how can they think? How can they see the world like this? How can they be so spectacularly wrongheaded? Don't they see the costs of big government? Don't they get frustrated by the nanny state? Don't they find all these rules and regulations impossible to live under? And the answer is no, because they just ignore them. They just simply, you know, like, here's a really important rule that, you know, when you leave office, you have to sign a document saying you've turned over everything you're supposed to. And it looks like she just didn't do it. And there is all these complicated rules for archiving federal documents, which I think is really a broad bipartisan support for, right? We paid for that. We're the taxpayers, right? So we have the right to access everything other than, hey, Bill, will you pick up a gallon of milk on the way home from work today? Unless it's a completely personal message. If that message has something to do with the process of creating policy, then we have a right to look at it, unless there's some, you know, classified information, things like that. And she just ignored it. The way she selected the emails to be deleted is she did a search for certain words, and if the words weren't in it, it was deemed personal. Now, you and I can think of, you know, that if you, a lot of ways that you know, if there's, for example, if there's an image in the document, but it doesn't use the terms, got deleted. Right? She deleted more than 30,000 emails. She undoubtedly deleted official, work-related communications. That's just impossible to not believe that right now. She had specific rules telling her not to do that, and she broke that. She may or may not have signed something swearing under oath that she turned over everything she was supposed to, and she didn't. So either she was supposed to sign it, and she didn't do it, which is a major no-no, or she signed it and lied, which is another similar major no-no. And what's, you know, what makes this a really bad martini, Greg, is I think we've literally caught her red-handed. Well, not literally. That's a Joe Biden literally. I don't know what color her hands are right now. But we have metaphorically caught her red-handed, and I don't think there's going to be any consequences for this. Because I don't, you know, you got to find a U.S. attorney or somebody who's going to prosecute her, all of whom have been appointed by President Obama, and all of whom probably want to work for the Hillary administration someday. You got to find somebody who's willing to, you know, take her to trial and put her on trial, even though we pretty much have a glaring obvious case here of her breaking the law. That would be a devastatingly bad martini. But by the way, it explains a little bit of why liberals are fans of big government, is that it doesn't affect them. If a law is inconvenient, they ignore it, and there really aren't consequences for ignoring the law the way there is for everybody else. And that's why I call them the progressive aristocracy. They have special rights. They have special privileges the rest of us don't have.
Excellent term. Very descriptive, very accurate as well. Also, weird to me that half of her emails were personal versus half work. I get way more work emails than personal emails. I don't know about you.
And I ran the numbers. I remember it was like 42 a day, which seems like very little to me. Now, somebody pointed out that I probably get a lot more press releases and stuff that I don't necessarily want to read. But the possibility that this is, you know, when you see that split, like that explains a little bit of like, oh, there were a whole bunch of work ones that just got put into the personal file because they didn't have the right search terms.
All right, on to the crazy martini now, Jim. And as regular listeners to the Three Martini Lunch will know, we are not all that fond of the policies and the practices of the current president of the United States, but I think today's Three Martini Lunch might be best entitled, Good Help is Really Hard to Find for this president. This from the Washington Post. Two Secret Service agents suspected of being under the influence while striking a White House security barricade drove through an active bomb investigation and directly beside the suspicious package, according to current and former government officials familiar with the incident. This was March 4th. 10:25 that night, a woman hopped out of a blue Toyota near the southeast entrance of the White House, holding a package wrapped in a green shirt and screaming, I'm holding a bleeping bomb. The woman put the object on the ground, retreated to her car. The agent ran to the car, opened the front passenger side door, and ordered the woman to get out. But she then put the car in reverse and accelerated. The woman eventually sped off. Police secured the area, but shortly before 11, the two high-ranking Secret Service agents, returning from a work party at a Chinatown bar about 8 blocks from the White House, drove their government car through the crime scene. According to people familiar with the incident, they drove through police tape, then hit a temporary barricade, using the car to push aside some barrels. Jim, it's bad enough these guys were drunk and driving. That should cost them their jobs probably right there on the spot. But, man, active bomb investigation. This is, once again, getting really serious, just like the guy who made it into the East Room with a knife.
Greg, friends don't let friends drink and drive to a bomb scene and go through some barriers and or come close to running over the actual suspicious package. Ask for the keys. When you work for the Secret Service. When I was at CPAC, I got a chance to speak to Dan Bongino, who is a former U.S. Secret Service agent, ran for Senate, ran for Congress, and is thinking about running again this year. Really smart, great guy. And I was like, I said to him, like, what's going on? You're a proud member of the Secret Service. We're used to trusting and holding these guys in high regard. His best explanation was that the move from the Department of the Treasury to the Department of Homeland Security change the culture of it. You know, it used to be you're in the Secret Service and you're in it for a long time, and then you had your pension, and that was your career. Moving to DHS, you know, we've seen the rise of these private security firms, and you could work for one of these private security firms and maybe find it extremely lucrative. And so all of a sudden, there's kind of a new post-government service career path to these guys. And they, you know, all of a sudden it kind of changes the incentives of the culture of the place. And he said that the culture of the place became a lot more don't make waves. You know, everybody be a yes man, do what say, don't report the problems, it's not a big deal. Just, you know, create the impression of things running smoothly. By the way, he speaks extremely highly of everybody who's on the presidential security detail. He still feels confident that the president is safe, and he thinks that we're not going to have that the vast majority of the guys and men and women of the Secret Service are doing the best job they can. His problem really is with the management of it. We've had a couple of bad, embarrassing examples, the Colombian hookers, and then the guy jumping the fence and all that stuff. This one, okay, there's a retirement party for the Secret Service spokesperson, and everybody's going there, and they're having a good time, and you want to wish the guy well as he heads off, you know, riding off into the sunset. And you get the alarm, the suspicious package at the White House, you got to come back. I suppose if you said, I've had too many drinks, I'm not in a, you know, I'm not fit for duty, that could be embarrassing. But it also would probably be the right choice in the circumstances rather than get behind the wheel of a car when you are perhaps a little too inebriated to do your job accurately. And I think if you're driving through the crime scene, yeah, that's a sign you've had a bit too much. But what's really, really worrying about this is that all of this is happening. These are two fairly high-ranking guys in the shadow of all the previous problems they've had. And they still go and do something like this. And that's what's particularly unnerving, is that you figure everybody would kind of be walking around on pins and needles. You kind of figure everybody would be on their very best behavior in light of what's going on, and it doesn't appear that they are. So it's very unnerving, very disturbing. And hopefully, you know, the Bongino assessment is correct, that the rank and file are still doing their jobs as best they can. Because, man, are we losing faith in the management these days.
Yeah, certainly the case. A lot of the Post story is already talking about whether the guy who just took over as head of the Secret Service is going to be able to survive this politically. So, amazing. Jim, have a good weekend. We'll talk to you Monday.
See you Monday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in on Monday for the next Three Martini Lunch. Have a great weekend, everyone.